Good morning. My name is Jody, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Caesars Entertainment and Caesars Resort Collections, LLC Investors and Lenders Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Joyce Arpan, Vice President of Finance and Assistant Treasurer, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks, everyone, for joining our call on the Centaur and Harrah's Las Vegas transactions. With me are Mark Fedora, our CEO, and Eric Hession, our CFO. Before we begin, I'd like to point to some of the disclaimers referenced on slides one and two, and also refer to the reconciliations at the end of the deck, starting on page 21 through the end. After the call, we are going to take a couple of questions. We plan to limit this to the sell-side analyst community only, and please keep your questions to this transaction only. Eric, if you want to start on slide three.
Great. Thanks, Joyce, and thanks, everybody, for joining us today. We've had a fairly active prior three-week period announcing two fairly large transactions, as well as our intention to construct a conference center on the east side land. I wanted to take the time this morning to walk everybody through the transactions in some level of detail, as well as give you the highlights from our perspective as to why we think these are very accretive, and we're extremely excited about the transactions. There's a little bit more technical detail in this presentation to help everybody with their models, but we're also happy to give additional commentary, and Mark's here as well to cover the strategic rationale from the corporate perspective. On slide three, as Joyce mentioned, we've broken out kind of the three transactions that we have going on. First is an update on the CRC timing. That facility was raised. The bonds are in escrow, and the term loan's allocated. We do anticipate closing that on the 22nd of February or of December, pending Louisiana Gaming Control Board approval. We believe we're on the agenda for that meeting and should be a successful approval. We've already received approval from Nevada and New Jersey, and those are the three jurisdictions that are needed for that particular transaction. Regarding the Centaur acquisition, again, very excited. We'll walk through the merits of these two properties, but great management team, great location, and the performance of the businesses is outstanding. We purchased it for a combined total price of $1.7 billion, which consists of $1.625 billion in cash at the closing, $75 million deferred purchase price, which is payable $25 million at the end of year two and $50 million at the end of year three. In addition, the seller will leave an extra $25 million of cash in the cage for us to be able to use on day one. From our calculated perspective, that makes the present value of the purchase roughly $1.65 billion. The purchase is of two racetracks and casino properties in the Indianapolis area, the Indiana Grand Racing and Casino and Hoosier Park. We do anticipate the acquisition to close in the second quarter, but of course, that's subject to regulatory approvals and other closing conditions. Post-acquisition, this will be a subsidiary of CRC and will be pledged to the lenders' first lien basis. The second transaction that we announced was the Harrah's Las Vegas sale and leaseback. We announced that earlier this week with VICI, the REIT that was formed through the restructuring process. We will sell the assets to VICI and lease it back. The proceeds will be $1.1 billion, which represents a 13x multiple on the annual initial rent of $87 million. Simultaneously, we will purchase from VICI 18.4 acres on the east side land behind Harrah's Las Vegas, where we will construct a conference center. We plan to complete the transaction by December 31st, We will incur a gain of roughly $900 million as a result of that transaction, which we anticipate will be fully offset by net operating losses generated prior to the restructuring that are still applicable to be applied during the year of emergence, and thus the importance of closing by the end of the year. This transaction in aggregate, combining the Centaur acquisition with the Harrah's sale leaseback, we believe is very credit accretive, as well as deleveraging both at the CRC and the CEC level. If you turn to slide four, we wanted to provide some of the specifics in terms of the capital structure. On the upper left-hand side, you can see on the HLV sale leaseback, it's fairly straightforward, proceeds of $1.136 billion. The uses will be $1.063 billion cash on the balance sheet and $74 million to purchase the east side land. Then on the bottom left-hand side, from the Centaur acquisition perspective, we utilize 100% of the cash from the HLV sale proceeds. We plan to draw $281 million on the revolver, cash from the balance sheet of approximately $256 million. You can see the deferred purchase price of $75 million, and the excess cage cash of $25 million gets us to the $1.7 billion purchase price. It's important to note that the cash from the balance sheet could swing higher if the timeline associated with the closing is pushed out. We've been very conservative and haven't assumed any cash accretion within the credit over the period of time while we're getting regulatory approval. So it's likely that the revolver draw when we close will be less than that. If you turn to the table on the right-hand side, we've pro forma'd what the transaction will look like. I'd just call out a few highlights. We had $445 million of cash at CRC on a pro forma basis, and that's less the bond interest payments that were made of $140 million. So that's why it'll be less than what you see if you add the two together from our financial statement third quarter. You can see also that we have subtracted out the rent expense from our EBITDAM and added the second year pro forma performance from Centaur of $190 million. Ultimately, that results in, from a credit statistic perspective, roughly a 0.2 times reduction of leverage, both on a first lien basis and on an overall basis, and it improves our EBITDA to interest expense ratio, going from 3.6 times to 3.8 times. So we believe it's credit enhancing across all classes. As I noted, this is a conservative representation in terms of the amount of cash used and the amount of revolver draw, because it doesn't assume any cash accretion following the quarter and up until we ultimately close the transaction. So with that, turning to page five, Mark's going to give you some commentary about the overall set of transactions.
Thanks, Eric. And I just want to congratulate Eric and the entire team, both on the finance and legal side, on the work that was done. We have our new senior VP, head of M&A, which is Mike Bailey, and he did a lot of work as well. And so we want to congratulate this team, because we are excited about how this clever set of transactions fulfills our previously committed goals. And the first goal was to make sure that as we do transactions going forward, we're leverage accretive to the, and we are leverage accretive here due to the sale of HLV real property. So that was combined with the convention center as well as the acquisition of Centaur. And those combinations, as you can see, all resulted in a very positive financial transaction for us. The Harrah's Las Vegas transaction, at a pro forma rent expense of 13 times, will really help us improve our lease economics while at the same time maximizing a lot of our realized value. And the Eastside Convention Center development at Harrah's Las Vegas creates opportunity to drive a significant incremental revenue to all of the Caesars Las Vegas properties, not just the properties that actually the Las Vegas Convention Center will serve. So we're excited by that. The management team has been really busy in looking at all of the incrementality that will occur as a result of these transactions. And as we think about Centaur, it adds scale to our business, and provides a lot of it's a strong growing Indianapolis region, and it's one of the few regions, frankly, in the country as a regional property that has such great macros in it, and actually has demonstrated some great growth where others have not. So we're excited by adding them, if you will, to the family of properties that we have. It does provide margin upside for us from a lot of the operational initiatives. We've been working very hard on the synergies and leveraging those synergies both on a fixed cost basis as well as on total rewards basis. I think that these synergies are going to be significant, and we've been conservative in the way we built them and the timing of those. We have a lot of know-how left in the organization on how to integrate bolt-on properties. As you know, before 2007, 2008, we did an awful lot of acquisitions, and those people are still resident here in the company. And so they're very excited to kind of return to some of the what was the DNA that was in the company previous before we became highly leveraged, as you know, and then, of course, we've gone through bankruptcy. So people are very pumped up about this acquisition and are working really hard on it. Centaur's acquisition grows Caesars database, as I mentioned just a minute ago, because it increases the value of the total rewards network. Eric's communicated that they have 1.2 million customers active in their database. So that's a large number, and there's not very much overlap. So we've been excited by the new customers we're going to be able to bring on board into Caesars Enterprise. And so with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Eric to kind of go through a lot of details so we can help everyone with their models and understand the transaction with total transparency. Eric?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, if you turn to page 6, we also wanted to reflect how this will look from a company-wide perspective on our capital structure. The company-wide debt will increase by, in the upper left-hand corner, by the $281 million we're projecting from the revolver draw, going from $300 million at the close of CRC up to $581 million. Enterprise-wide gross leverage, we anticipate falling by 0.2 turns. Again, this is in the second year pro forma for those synergies, so it's using $190 million performance of the Centaur property. And then our fixed charge coverage ratio, which includes the rent, both the existing rent from the original transaction as well as the incremental rent associated with this transaction, improves by 0.2 turns. We've shown the capital structure on the bottom left and then some EBITDAR and EBITDA calculations for you as well on the bottom right. It's important to note that this transaction will keep our overall company-wide cash balance roughly neutral. As I mentioned, we plan to use about $250 million worth of cash, but it'll likely come in lower than that as we're generating between $40 and $50 million a month in the CRC entity once we refinance the debt and take advantage of the lower interest rate expenses that we have. On slide 7, we wanted to try to provide a bridge regarding how the two transactions will work in concert from a free cash flow perspective. Starting on the left, we have our trailing 12 months, 930 CRC adjusted EBITDA. Subtracting out interest expense and our steady state CapEx of 190 would give you roughly $600 million of free cash flow. It's important to note that as we've mentioned in our conference calls and in other just materials, we do anticipate spending above the steady state level for the next few years as we complete our hotel room renovation projects. Next year, our CapEx in the CRC facility is around $300 million, so another $100 million ahead of what's shown here. Adding in the Centaur EBITDA of 190, less roughly $20 million of Centaur CapEx and the HLV rent of $87 million, and the incremental interest from the revolver gets you pro forma cash flows of mid-$650 million range, which is an increase of around $70 million on an annual basis. For next year at the CRC level, we do anticipate generating right around $500 million worth of cash flow. Pre-Centaur, it'll be around $475, and then post-Centaur, around $525 million. So from the convention center perspective, we would anticipate being easily able to fund that construction out of the cash flows that are generated by the facility itself. Turning to page 8, we wanted to re-highlight what our capital structure and corporate structure looks like at this point. You can see CEOC on the right-hand side is mostly OpCo properties, although there are a few owned properties such as Philadelphia, as well as the international operations. And then on the left-hand side, this is the merged pro forma CRC credit facility. And you can see Harrah's Las Vegas will be moved to REIT-owned CRC operated, and we'll have Indiana Grand and Hoosier Park added as collateral for the credit. If we turn to page 9 and moving on to 10, I wanted to walk through Harrah's Las Vegas and the Convention Center. On page 10, Harrah's Las Vegas, it was built in 1973 and thus has an extremely low basis. As I mentioned earlier, the sale will generate roughly a $900 million gain, which we will offset with NOLs. We've extensively upgraded a number of the rooms and plan to complete all of the rooms in 2019 and 2020. We've given some historical performance of the property on the bottom right-hand side. You can see there's been generally steady revenue growth and quite strong EBITDA growth over the last four-year period. Turning to page 11, our Eastside Convention Center is a project that we're very excited about. We've been mentioning it for a number of months now. It's really coming into fruition with our detailed drawings, and we do plan to break ground now in early second quarter of 2018 so that it'll be ready in 2020. We estimate the cost to be approximately $375 million. That includes some additional costs for parking as well as a bridge to connect the convention center with Harrah's and the Link. As I mentioned, it'll be funded from cash flow from operations. It'll be roughly 300,000 square feet of space. And it's going to consist of two ballrooms of approximately 100,000 square feet, which will be placed competitively when we're marketing the facilities as the first and second largest ballrooms with columnless ballrooms in the United States, as well as two 40,000 square foot junior ballrooms that can be used for breakouts and other purposes. It will also consist of about 100,000 square foot plaza that can be used for breakouts and other purposes associated with the convention. We believe that Las Vegas continues to be an extremely attractive destination for conventions. We believe we as a city possess a significant cost advantage over other cities. Our airlift is exceptional. The proximity of the hotels to the convention facilities is ideal. And we think that investing in this space right now is an ideal time to be doing it, and we anticipate very high returns at relatively modest risk. I'd also note, as we mentioned in our conference calls and in other materials, that the facilities, the properties that this facility will service are three that have some of the lowest convention space to hotel room ratios in not only our portfolio but in the entire city. All three properties were built before convention centers entered the conventions entered the city, and as a result, have challenges in the midweek period, in particular, filling the hotel rooms. And this convention center will suit them perfectly. Turning to page 12, wanted to highlight some of the lease terms associated with Harrah's Las Vegas. It'll be a 15-year lease with 4 5-year extensions. The rent coverage initially will be set at 1.5 times, which results in a purchase price of $1.1 billion at 13 times the initial rent. We have a rent coverage cap of 1.6 times, and the escalator escalates 1% for the first 5 years and then 2% or CPI thereafter, but subject to the cap. Variable rent is 4% of revenue indexed to the 2017 year. And I'd note that we agreed to execute on our planned CapEx plan through 2021, which consists of $171 million worth of CapEx. It's important to note that this CapEx is included in all of the CapEx projections that we've been providing throughout. And it also includes about $70 million that's mostly spent already in 2017. We do anticipate of the remaining $100 million that we agreed to spend with Vici, $70 million of that will be in hotel rooms, and likely in the years 19 and 20 as we prepare for the convention center to come online. Again, those were planned and in the schedule, as well as modest $30 million over the course of those 4 years to account for maintenance CapEx, slots, and other spending. Thereafter, our maintenance CapEx minimum will be set at 1% of net revenue. From the east side, we're going to purchase the 18.4 acres of land, roughly $4 million an acre, which we think is a good price. We then have entered into a put and a call option with Vici, where we have an option to put the convention center to Vici after a certain period of time. And if we fail to do that or elect not to do that, then they have a call option starting after that period of time. It's predetermined in rent ratio based on the cost to construct and the land value. So we think it's a good option both ways, and ultimately will help us further monetize the investment in the convention center. And it logically makes sense that the convention center and the property should both be associated with each other due to the synergies between the two and the benefits associated with it. Turning to page 14, wanted to give a quick overview of Centaur itself. As I mentioned, it consists of two properties, Indiana Grand and Hoosier Park. Indiana Grand was constructed in the 2008 and 9 period. It has approximately 2,100 slots and 9 food and beverage outlets, as well as a 1 mile dirt track and a 7/8 mile turf track. Hoosier Park is similarly sized with 11 food and beverage outlets, 1,900 slots, and it has a 7/8 mile dirt track. So both of them are horse tracks. I've gone through the statistics there, but again, as Mark mentioned, we're very excited about the two properties. They're located in the attractive central Indiana area in Indianapolis. Indianapolis is a growing city that we are excited to be a part of. We believe that the introduction of the Total Rewards program will drive incremental revenues, and we'll be able to use our scale and cost structure to further drive synergies. And in addition, it has the opportunity in 2021 to add table games, which we know drives additional upside in terms of the performance of the property. Slides 15 and 16 give you an overview of the two tracks in a little bit more detail. I won't walk through them here, but they're there for your reading pleasure. And then looking at slide 17, you can see that the trends have been very strong and consistent, growing at a 3% CAGR, which for the regional markets puts them on the higher end of performance. In addition, we believe the market's underpenetrated relative to its peers when looking at a number of different categories, and thus we're very confident that the introduction of table games will drive incremental revenues, as well as the introduction of total rewards will drive improved performance as well. Slide 18 covers some historical information from Centaur itself, 2.4% CAGR from a net revenue perspective, and then from an EBITDA perspective, a 5.7% CAGR, resulting in trailing 12-month performance of $140 million. The management team there has done an exceptional job maintaining margins and driving the results through this period, and we look forward to working with them going forward. So with that, I will pause, and we can check for questions from the operator.
Certainly. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Chad Bennion of Macquarie. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, and congrats on the deals. You've talked about the bridge from $140 million of EBITDA at Centaur to the $190 of your projected EBITDA, so it makes sense not to monetize the land at this time, given the ramp. Do you plan to monetize the real estate over time? And as we think about other M&A that you may become involved in, is this the right way that we should be thinking about how you will finance using other assets as kind of a source of capital instead of the property that you are acquiring? Thanks.
Yeah, Chad, that's a great question, and it's good insight that the ability to sell to a REIT when you're operating a property that's ramping, in addition to one, as you know, we're optimistic from table games coming in, makes it difficult to project what your ultimate coverage ratio is going to be. And for that reason, as well as some other tax reasons, we didn't think that this Centaur property was an ideal candidate to be part of the REIT. Going forward, if we ever do elect to have the Centaur properties be sold and leased back, we do have a ROFR with Vici on that. So it'll be something that we certainly consider. But at this point, given the ramp, it just didn't make a lot of sense. We felt also that the combination of the gain that was built into the inherent value of Harrah's, given the emergence tax treatment, was very beneficial to complete this year, and also the ability to access the land that we needed to complete the hotel, the conference center, made sense that the Harrah's was the ideal property to sell and lease back. As we go forward, we'll look at each transaction independently and evaluate whether it makes sense to do a sale leaseback, whether it makes sense to do add on to our credit facility, use the revolver, or to use the cash on the balance sheet, and make the best decision for the enterprise.
Okay, thanks, Eric. My follow up is with respect to the NOLs that you just mentioned on the HLV sale. Can you give us a ballpark of what's left, what the tax rate, cash tax rate may be in the upcoming years, if there's any change versus kind of how you've guided us through that in quarters past? Thanks.
Sure. There is definitely an incentive for us to complete this transaction this year to ensure that we have the NOLs available. We're still in the process of finalizing the calculation of the NOLs. As we noted in our third quarter 10-Q, we do expect that there will be some NOL carry forward. We expect that there will be some beyond the use of the NOLs to offset this transaction. We plan on quantifying that as soon as we get a final answer from our tax team. As you can imagine, it's very difficult, and we have some assistance from one of the big four consulting firms helping us out to calculate that. But we do anticipate some NOLs going forward, and so I would anticipate in 2018 that we would not pay substantial taxes at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of David Farber of Credit Suisse. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
Good. Some of my questions were already asked and answered, but for those that have not, I guess I just wanted to talk a minute on the convention center. The deck's very helpful. I haven't gone through all of it, but maybe Eric or Mark, just talk about how you think the asset at the convention center will ultimately be owned by who in terms of how it's performing, and maybe just talk about the put call features there and what you think ultimately will happen, and then I have a follow-up. Thanks.
Yeah, as I mentioned, the convention center will predominantly benefit Harrah's Las Vegas. It'll also benefit the Link and, to a lesser degree, Flamingo. All three of those properties are right now starved for convention space, given the lack of on-premises convention space relative to their hotel capacity. So, again, we're very confident that we'll be able to sell this facility and that it'll benefit all three properties. Ultimately, though, the real benefit of a convention center is that it does drive incremental revenues to hotels and to food and beverage operations in those hotels. We do sell a lot of banquets associated with the convention center, but the real benefit is the integrated nature. And so what we tried to do with Vici, who recognized that fact, is to set up basically a put-call structure so that ultimately the convention center would end up in the same entity as Harrah's Las Vegas. And we think that that's the best long-term solution. Vici agreed. And again, due to the fact that we had timing, we didn't want to put pressure on making a transaction in a certain early period of time when there could be credit market issues on either side. We wanted to make sure that we each had time to evaluate it and execute the put call. And so that's why these are somewhat extended periods of time. Ultimately, though, I think it makes sense to have them together, and you should expect that we would sell it back to Vici along with the land that was sold to us.
Right, and I think that just to add to this, just a couple of qualitative things, and then talk about the balance sheet for a minute. There's also expected to be some overflow from Caesars Palace as they pretty much are over capacity or under capacity right now, and they have a lot of overflow that comes from that. So, you know, walking across the bridge to the facility isn't a big deal when you consider what other patrons do on one end of the strip right now to get to some convention space. In addition to that, you know, on the actual demand flow for the convention space, we expect it to be fairly large. We've already talked to a lot of customers and have gone a long way to booking it already. So it's a, because it has the largest number one and the number two size independent rooms, that's just a big, huge selling tool for us. When you look at Las Vegas and all the stuff that's out there, and we have the number one and the number two position in terms of size, it's a big event for, you know, hosting any kind of large business group meetings, because it lacks that right now in the market. And so we tried to build it in a way that would be unique and be center strip, which is more convenient for people. And we also have a five-minute maximum walk time from all three of the facilities that Eric just mentioned, talking about Harrah's and the Link, and then and we're going to cover those walkways, make them extremely comfortable. We're still finalizing the details of the architectural plan, but the idea is to make it even faster if we can. But we now know it's at 5 minutes, under 5 minutes, actually four to be exact. We feel good about that. And then, you know, as far as the balance sheet implications of selling it back to VG's, I think, you know, we've already modeled that and feel really good that this, again, isn't one of those balance sheet items that will be, you know, help us from a leverage standpoint and may even be, I don't want to promise this, but it could be accretive. It's depending on how the outcome is of filling the convention space as we model it and see what happens going forward. But we're, again, very hopeful that this structure is going to allow us to be a much more profitable company that actually, and then when you look at a return on invested capital, we continue to get stronger.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And then my final question was just on the tax implications. You touched upon that briefly, but are there any other thoughts you might have with respect to next year, any other assets that have low basis that you'd consider? And so I guess specifically my question is, how should we think about the NOL balance once this transaction's closed? And then secondarily, are there any other assets that you'd perhaps consider given maybe there's NOL considerations with it? And that's it. Thanks for me.
Yeah, I touched on that briefly, David. We're still finalizing our calculation. It's extremely complex, as you can imagine, given all the different parts associated with the ultimate restructure and the purchase and the lease back, et cetera. We do believe that there will be some NOLs going forward. We put some high-level disclosure in our Q3 10-Q, and we will finalize that and provide that information shortly at a minimum in our 10-K when we report in February for that. But at this point, we do believe that there'll be some going forward into 2018, and they should be sufficient to offset our tax liability in 18. We'll provide more information about the ability to offset more going forward at a later date. And, of course, all of this would come into play with respect to the new tax laws that are being currently debated in the government.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Joe Greff of J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Good morning, everybody.
Most of my questions
have been asked and answered, but just a couple of small ones here for you, Eric. You're talking today, and these relate to Centaur, you're talking today about $190 million of EBITDA in your first or in your second full year after the acquisition. I think in the original Centaur acquisition press release, the implied EBITDA was $205 million, and obviously both these numbers don't take into account the contemplation of table game EBITDA generation. What is the delta of $15 million there? Is that a timing issue? Is it the other $15 million relates to what you think the cross play might be into Las Vegas as a result of Centaur? Can you help explain that, please?
Sure. Yeah, it's mainly timing. We just reflected the second year here, which is when we'll have achieved most of the synergies, but not all. So there'll still be some synergies that come into year three, and that's really what was reflected in those numbers. This does not include table games, which would be a further boost to that performance. And we also, because table games is in 2021, we didn't want to reflect it in these figures today. But that will further enhance the returns on the project and reduce the leverage. Additionally, the cross-market benefit that we would expect to receive in Las Vegas is not reflected in these figures either, and so that's further upside to the enterprise.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Pace of J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I'm just wondering, just big picture and maybe looking forward, you know, is the transactions that you're kind of that you've announced and talking about today, is this really we should view as a blueprint for future M&A opportunities that you have, whereby, you know, you're buying an asset, selling real estate, and structuring it as no worse than a leverage neutral net result, or maybe slightly deleveraging? So you can you just talk big picture balance sheet, and is that a goal going forward?
Yeah, I would not necessarily interpret this as a template. I think if you look at the three things that we were trying to accomplish in this particular transaction, it worked out very well. We had a very low basis asset. We wanted to secure the land and help ourselves fund the convention center, and we also had an opportunity to purchase what's a very desirable Midwest asset. And this was what we felt the optimum financing and capital structure package to accomplish all three of those goals. Going forward, I would look at us as generally agnostic to capital structure and transactions, in the sense that we are not going to lever ourselves up in terms of increasing leverage, but in terms of financing any future transactions, it could be using regular way debt. As I mentioned, we have sufficient cash on the balance sheet to do a lot of transactions, and we'll have a sizable revolver. And then, as you mentioned, we also have wholly owned assets that could be monetized through the REIT. So I think we will be flexible. We'll keep them all on the table, and we'll really look at our overall cost of capital to the company and decide, given that, which approach makes the best sense, given whatever the dynamics of that particular transaction are.
And to add to what Eric said, I guess as we look at, you know, we have a deal committee meets every week, and we look at everything, and we're very clean sheet of paper in our approach, and we want to do things that create significant value that can even differentiate our company from other companies in the space. And so that means, you know, things that increase the growth rate of the overall business, things that are EBITDA margin increasing, right? So we don't want to look at anything that dilutes the EBITDA margin of the company or the growth rate of the company. So everything we look at has a series of filters that has to do with kind of growth rate, EBITDA margin, and making sure strategically this helps differentiate us from the pack. Obviously, we're a core leader in, you know, what we call a gaming business. We do more gaming revenue than anyone in the United States, and we have more locations. And so we want to leverage that, and we want to leverage it in existing businesses, but even in other businesses and adjacencies that could help us. You know, we're actually in six different businesses. We measure them on the P&L basis, and a lot of verticals, as you know, there's gaming, obviously, and then we have a whole segment that we call internet, mobile, social stuff, and we're looking at that intensely as well. And then, obviously, you know, the whole entertainment business, it covers actually a couple of verticals. And then, you know, you look at the hospitality side in Vegas and some of our other destination markets. That's a very strong, very high-margin business for us. So we're looking at each vertical and trying to expand on those verticals that have really great growth characteristics. So what you'll see out of us, I think, is a real emphasis on value creation. And that's creating value for shareholders. And that's our primary focus, is creating great value for shareholders. We're not going to go through transactions like, you know, 50 little small transactions where we have to do all the work that you do on a big transaction, but you get very little benefit. You'll see us being, you know, I think very selective in what we do and how we do it. And the structures that Eric talked about, we just want to be flexible. And but we do want to make, you know, obviously think about improving the balance sheet.
Okay, and then maybe just to go back to the Centaur EBITDA, the 140 to the 190, you know, of that $50 million, and I apologize if you mentioned this earlier, but, you know, how much of that $50 million is low-hanging fruit OPEX versus any revenue synergies you see there? Because I guess I'm looking at Centaur margins of 28, looking at your other regional margins. So, you know, what's different about this property from a margin perspective, and how much is really just OPEX synergies that you can do very easily?
Yeah, I would say It's about 50-50 based on what we're looking at. We think the market itself is fairly strong, and we've given you year two numbers, so that'll have some organic growth in it. In addition, we have upside from Total Rewards entering the market. We also believe that there are some operational synergies. As we've mentioned earlier, we really have what we believe is a great track going on for IT back office support, and believe that by putting in cloud solutions and other technology-driven opportunities, there'll be significant savings that we can have from the back-of-house perspective. As we mentioned, the properties are quite well run today, good customer service, good focus on keeping the facilities in great shape, and so we'd expect to continue to do that, but there's still, as we see it, opportunities both on the revenue and the expense side. We've gone through, we have listed specific opportunities, and we have given names in terms of people internally who are responsible for achieving all those on a specific timeline, and so we'll execute it very attentively and make sure that we're able to achieve the numbers that we've laid out here, or if not, exceed those.
Great. And then, Eric, if I could just toss one more out. You've talked about a $2 billion cash number. Obviously, some things are changing here, but a question we get often is where that cash sits throughout the capital structure. So, you know, can you help us with how much cash sits the parent company? I saw CRC cash, but how much is at CEOC as well?
Sure. So we have roughly at the CRC level, you saw that we had about 400 and – sorry, I'm pulling my notes here. Yeah, sorry, $450 million at the CRC level. At CEOC, we mentioned pulling out from the restructuring. We had about $300 million there. We have about $150 million in our insurance subsidiaries, and then the parent has about $850 million cash. That totals $1,750. The balance are in subsidiaries such as Chester, CIE, Baltimore, et cetera. So that gives you a rough estimate. The only thing I'd add, those are kind of figures as of the end of the third quarter. We'd use some of that to pay for the fees and the call premium associated with CRC, but we're also generating cash as well.
Great. Very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jared Sojian of Wolfe Research. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking my question. So just to follow up on that last question about the transaction blueprint, the Harrah's sale economics, the 1.5 times rent coverage, the 13 times rent, 8% cap rate, however you want to look at it, should we assume those metrics are similar valuations for your other Vegas properties, or do you view Harrah's as maybe lower multiple asset relative to, you know, maybe Paris or Planet Hollywood?
You know, it's hard to say. We didn't try to negotiate a sale of those other properties. I do think you highlighted two properties that are probably you'd consider of better asset quality than Harrah's. As we noted, Harrah's basis was extremely low, and that's due to its age. It is in a great location, but you could argue Paris and Planet Hollywood are equally, if not better, locations. So from that standpoint, I'd hate to speculate. It probably should have some correlation to asset quality. And as you know, Harrah's, although it's a good property that we have, it's not certainly at the top end of our quality range here in Las Vegas.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. And then, you know, obviously, I know you expect to use the NOLs for this, but future sales, how do the basis compare for your other assets in Vegas? Would we assume that, you know, there's going to be some sort of, you know, taxable gain outside of NOLs going forward in the future?
We haven't disclosed anything about the specific bases with any of the properties. You could probably infer that Harrah's has one of the lowest or the largest gap, rather, between the basis and what it could be sold for. But I wouldn't want to speculate on the others, particularly because we don't know what the ultimate sale price could be and because we just don't have any plans at this point to sell any of those
Got it. Okay. Thank you. And then just one last one for me. I may have missed it, but can you just talk about what EBITDA and return you're expecting to get on the convention center investment? And is that 375, is that in addition to the $74 million land cost, or is that all inclusive?
So the 375 is in addition to that. About $350 million is basically direct construction costs, FF&E, steel, that type of thing. The balance is associated with incremental parking and other land improvements that we're going to have to make. In terms of the returns, overall, we're expecting kind of a mid-teens unlevered equity IRR. When you apply our balance sheet to that, you obviously get a much stronger return.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ian Zaffino of Oppenheimer. Your line is open.
Hi. Great. Thank you very much. Just maybe a housekeeping question here, but on the land, how does the 18 acres that you're purchasing fit with the 39 acres that you own right around there? Will the convention kind of expand over both those areas, or and also if not, what was the decision to buy the 18 instead of using the 39 acres? Thanks.
Yeah, it's a good question. The map on the east side land is fairly complicated. Some of the land is owned by us, and some of the land is owned by Vici. In this particular case, the location where we wanted to put the convention center spanned both lands that we owned as well as Vici. We don't need the full 18 acres to build, but we did buy sufficient numbers of parcels to fully fit the convention center on that land. We could have purchased less land, but it would have required us to reparcelize the land. And as you know, we wanted to complete the transaction this year. So we elected to purchase the parcels that allowed us to fit the convention center fully on the land. So ultimately, the convention center will consist of some land that Vici used to own and some land that we own.
Okay, got it. And as far as the balance sheet, this transaction leaves you with still a ton of cash. I know you have some aspirations internationally, also domestically, but maybe give us an idea of maybe your target cash balance or your appetite for additional activity. I mean, this is a pretty big deal you're doing now, but, you also do have a lot of cash sitting on the balance sheet. So I wanted to see what your intentions were or your plans were. Thanks.
Yeah, at this point, we don't have any specific plans to do further acquisitions. Mark mentioned that we remain active on a number of different fronts in terms of trying to expand our same-store footprint, both from management opportunities, branding and licensing opportunities, and we do look at properties or companies as they come along for sale that could help augment our portfolio from a strategic perspective. Also, as Mark mentioned, we have to be a little careful right now to make sure that we don't pursue too many acquisitions and impair our ability to generate the synergies. So in this case, we just completed or are in the process of completing a very large transaction that requires good execution on our part. And so any future acquisitions will have to take that into account. That said, we do think that there's still opportunities to expand the footprint, and we'll remain vigilant for that. But we'll have to take all those things into account. From the capital structure standpoint, you're right, we still have a sizable amount of cash on the balance sheet as a result of the way we structured this transaction, and we'll really use that for flexibility purposes to evaluate what we need to do going forward from a capital allocation perspective. But as I've mentioned before, having the large cash balance as well as generating a significant amount of cash each year from our core operations gives us a substantial amount of flexibility.
Okay, that's really helpful. So I guess for modeling purposes, we shouldn't really expect that cash to sit on the balance sheet for years upon years. You may have a decision that you have to make. Is that right?
Well, we haven't really given any guidance as to what we plan to do with the cash. I would look at it from an investor standpoint. Cash on the balance sheet is a positive because it provides flexibility, but also if it's on the balance sheet over an extended period of time, it's not necessarily generating the returns that the equity investors demand. So from that standpoint, I don't think you'd see the cash balance sitting for years and years. But on the other hand, we don't want to, deploy it to things that aren't value accretive either.
Okay, great. This is really helpful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, and thank us everybody for calling in today, and appreciate your time.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.